uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Hi, everyone. This is Motherboard Editor-in-Chief Jason Kebler in for Matt Galt, whose mixing board is not working at the moment, or rather, he doesn't have it yet. So I'll be your host today. I'm here with Lorenzo Franceschi Bigarai. Hi, Lorenzo.
Hi, Jason. Hello, everyone.
It's good to have you. We're doing this, as we mentioned last week, we're trying a new thing where we're recording live, and today we're talking about a story you just broke. About Cineverse. Do you want to tell us A, what happened here, and B, what is Cineverse?
So I guess the long story short is that Cineverse, which is one of the largest global providers of network infrastructure, was hacked for years, maybe 5 years, and they just disclosed this around a week ago. In a filing to the SEC. Cineverse is probably a company that you haven't heard about because they don't have they don't interact with the consumers, with cell phone users. Their customers are companies like Verizon, AT&T, Telefonica, which is like a Spanish cell phone provider that is present in also South America, Vodafone in the UK and other countries, China Mobile, one of the largest cell phone providers in China. So what they do is essentially allow these companies to talk to each other when their cell phone customers want to talk to each other. So let's say that you travel to Europe and you have an American cell phone. Cineverse helps you helps your cell phone connect to your network at home, let's say your AT&T network. They also route text messages all over the world. They say that it's like billions every year, billions of text messages. They keep like billing data. So, you know, that can be as boring as the cost of a call, but as sensitive as who you called, when, for how long, where you were when you called. I think it's important to note that the location data is not super precise. It's not like GPS data, but, you know, it's like cell phone base stations, cell phone towers. So roughly, you know, where you are, you know, the neighborhood you're in, the city you're in, the country you're in.
Right. I think one of the really critical things, like this really put it in perspective for me. In 2019, there was basically like a mishap. There was like a configuration update in the back end of Cineverse, and basically like tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of text messages just kind of got lost in transit. Like they just didn't, people sent them and they didn't get to the recipient. And not only did that happen, it's just like they disappeared for months. And then like whenever the update took, people were getting these text messages from actually Valentine's Day, like months and months later. And so, as you said, Cineverse is one of these companies that not that many people have heard of, but it's basically like it's a telecom infrastructure company that is hugely important behind the scenes. And as you mentioned, they were hacked, and not only were they hacked, but the hacker was in the system for 5 years, which is kind of mind-boggling. Lorenzo, so I went to, on Cineverse YouTube earlier today just to check out how they pitched themselves. I think it's worth having a watch. So this is from a video called, like, We Are Cineverse, essentially. And let's see if this plays. I think that it will, though.
Make that work. Oops.
Sorry, everyone. Here we go.
Hello. We're Cineverse, Synergy plus Universe. We bring the mobile world together. Here's an example. You get on a plane. Turn on your mobile device when you land. And you get connected to anyone with any mobile phone operator. Anywhere in the world. We make that work. Now say you want to get emails, surf the web, send a text to anyone on any network anywhere. How does that work? There are hundreds of mobile phone operators worldwide. Each one is like an island. Cineverse provides the bridges between these network islands. So when you have operator A and your friend has operator B or C or D, we connect you. and everyone is happy. We make the complex simple. We are the heart of your communications world, and we deliver endless possibilities.
That's beautiful, simply beautiful. There's a lot of videos like this on their YouTube where they just kind of talk about how they connect people and make everyone happy. They also provide some of the infrastructure for like business text messages. So if you're a business and you want to send messages to your customers, like you can contract with Cineverse and you can tell them like, hey, we're giving a promotion to our clothes store, or hey, you know, for a wait list at a restaurant. Like that's the sort of service that Cineverse can provide. But I think the crucial thing and the thing that obviously came through in this video is when you send an SMS, like say I have Verizon and you have AT&T and we're not using iMessage or WhatsApp, we're using like SMS, Cineverse kind of handles like the infrastructure that allows me to talk to you, at least as I understand it. Is that right, Lorenzo?
Yeah, that's correct. And as you said earlier, I think the incident, you know, the Valentine's incident of 2019 really shows you, you know, just how much content and data they handle. You know, it's not just businesses. It could be anyone. You know, I think there are some numbers that I think help explain the potential impact of this breach. Cineverse says that 95 of the 100 biggest cell phone carriers in the world are their customers. You know, we mentioned some of them earlier. In the data breach disclosure, which was in the SEC filing, Cineverse said, and I quote, Cineverse says that the breach hit approximately 235 of its customers. First of all, I'm a little confused at what approximately actually means here, because is it 235? Is it more? It seems to me, like I'm reading through the lines here, really between the lines, it seems like they are not sure, which is kind of concerning. They also say that out of precaution, they reset all their customers' passwords, even the ones that they believe were not compromised, which again shows me, I mean, that's a good security practice after a data breach, but it could also mean that they're not still sure of the extent of the data breach. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really curious here, like, you had a lot of back and forths with Cineverse's, you know, PR firm. I believe it was an external PR firm that sort of maybe was hired to do damage control here. They disclosed this to the SEC, and I'm curious because that's not usually how we learn about hacks. Like often we learn about hacks because a huge amount of information is dumped somewhere, or we learn about it because a company will put out a press release saying, hey, you know, we were hacked and you need to change your password or whatever. Here we found out about it through an official government filing. I'm curious, like, was this a required disclosure because of some sort of law? Like, I know that there's been some legislation over the last few years that has required companies to give disclosures more often than they may have before. So do we know under like what statute this was actually disclosed and why?
Yeah, so there's two things that are worth mentioning here and like sort of untangling. One is what Cineverse is saying in the filing and to us, which is, again, kind of vague. You know, the people that I spoke with, the sources that I spoke with, believe that the vagueness is on purpose. They believe that Cineverse either doesn't know exactly how bad it is or doesn't want to say it. And that could be for many reasons. It could be because they're still investigating. They say that they detected this breach in May 2016, which, you know, it's 5 months ago, which sounds like a lot. But given that this is a five-year-old and ongoing, you know, it lasted for 5 years, data breach, it's possible that they're still investigating. It's possible that they're still trying to figure out where the hackers were, how, you know, how deep they went into the network, whether there's still some backdoors and stuff like that. To answer your question more directly, I think that this was part of the disclosure that they are doing, part of the process that they're undergoing to go public. They just recently announced the merger with a company that essentially will take them to Wall Street. And this is one of the filings that they have to do to disclose their risks, to, you know, sort of open up to potential investors that may want to invest. I don't think that this was part of some sort of a legal obligation to disclose a data breach. Those laws, I think there's no federal law about disclosing data breaches yet. There are state laws, but they are, you know, they differ from state to state. And usually they compel companies only in the case, only when hackers access personal information, which I think it's also like legally limited to stuff like credit card information, social security numbers, things like that. So in this case, that's just data that, you know, Cineverse just doesn't have. They don't collect SSNs. They don't collect credit card numbers. But that doesn't mean that this wasn't bad.
Right. So, I do want to talk, you, as I said, you had a bunch of back and forths with their PR folks, and like, they were very vague in terms of what was actually accessed. Although, you know, it seems as though this was a bad hack just based on how it was written up in the SEC report, the types of data that Cineverse has, the fact that it impacted so many of its customers, as well as the fact that just like, we know what Cineverse does based on, Valentine's Day mishap from a few years ago where text messages went missing. It's like, it's not just the metadata. It's also the content of SMS messages. And I think I think Carsten Knoll, who is a security researcher that we've talked to a lot of times, one of the most respected people in this space, kind of put this into perspective. He said, quote, Cineverse has access to the communication of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people around the world. A 5-year breach of one of Cineverse's main systems is a global privacy disaster. And then he goes on to speculate and says, well, this isn't speculation, but he's basically saying Cineverse systems have direct access to phone call records and text messaging and indirect access to a large range of internet accounts protected with SMS two-factor authentication. Hacking Cineverse will ease access to Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, and all kinds of other accounts all at once. I want to talk about that indirect access for a minute, because I didn't think about this when you first came to me saying you were going to write this story. But basically, you know, SMS two-factor is still the most popular form of two-factor authentication. And if someone were able to essentially access the text messages of everyone in the world, more or less in real time, which is the type of data that Cineverse is handling, you know, this could be a very real disaster.
Yeah, I think Carsten's point is very important, you know, and as you said, this is speculation just because Cineverse doesn't want to tell us what happened exactly. But, you know, this is data that they have access to on a day-to-day basis, from multiple countries in the world. And it is very, you know, it is possible that whoever was in there was intercepting these text messages. And, you know, if you intercept those, then you can reset passwords, you can hack into accounts. And as Carsten said, you know, we're talking about every company in the world, essentially, right? Let's say that the hackers wanted to, you know, get into my Gmail. They could have just intercepted a token that went to my phone, or even like, yeah. And at that point, they could have just got in. The potential impact, I think, if we want to speculate, is also that you can, you know, monitor where someone is moving, someone is traveling, where they are, who they're talking to. You know, I don't have information about this yet, but my gut, when I look at something like this, my gut feeling is this is a state-sponsored hacking group. They were there for 5 years. They were relatively stealthy because, you know, they were there for 5 years. They didn't get caught in 5 years, which means that they weren't like downloading records, willy-nilly, getting everybody's data.
Yeah, and, I mean, can you talk a little bit about that? Because it's like, we obviously don't know who did this hack. We don't know the level of damage. We don't know whether, you know, this data was used in some nefarious way. But when you have a hacker who is in a system for 5 years, and it's the type of company like Cineverse, where it's sort of like not a public facing company. It's like behind the scenes. It's a behind the scenes internet infrastructure type of company. I mean, what does that suggest about the types of actors who A, have this type of sophistication, and B, the types of people who sit in a network for that long?
Yeah, I mean, let's put it that way. Senator Ron Wyden said that the data that Cineverse manages is an espionage gold mine. So if this was a state-sponsored government hacking group, which again, we don't know, but if it was that, then this is just a great company to be in. This is a company you want to be in as long as you can, because you could just use it whenever you need to. Let's say that you want to monitor a dissident that's like in another country. You want to know who they talk to, who they're close to. You know, it's not even about getting their 2FAA codes. You can do that. But what you want to do here, what you may want to do, is just keep an eye on them. Maybe intercept a text message that they send to someone. Maybe delete it if... I don't know, if one of your like spy agency colleagues goes to a country and you want to delete a record, then you can do that too. It's just like, I think it's important to know that like while the extent of the breach can be huge, it's also unlikely that these guys downloaded like millions of text messages. They probably did not need to do that.
Right. What do you think is going to happen here in terms of like what happens now? They've disclosed this breach. We've written about it. You know, other people are going to write about it, presumably. You know, do you think that more information will naturally come out? Does this raise to the level of something where we're going to get like a congressional inquiry? What have lawmakers said so far?
Yeah, so far the only one who's you know, weighed in is Senator Ron Wyden, who said that this raises a lot of questions about, you know, the cybersecurity levels that Cineverse has, their due diligence, the fact that, you know, they did not disclose this for months, the fact that it took them 5 years to find out about the hackers. You know, it's really hard to tell whether this will get to Congress or anything like that, but this is the kind of story that at some point we will need to know more. Like, the company just needs to be more open. Presumably, they said that they are reaching out, and they've been reaching out to their customers, meaning the AT&Ts and T-Mobiles of the world, to notify them of this damage, and they are investigating as well. They notified law enforcement, so there's, you know, presumably an FBI investigation. We reached out to the FBI. They did not respond. We reached out to the FCC, which probably has some sort of authority here. They may be investigating CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency of the U.S. government, declined to comment. They may have some authority to investigate here. So I guess this is all to say that more things will shake out. There's just too many open questions here. There's just too many details that are unknown, and that someone will need to know. You know, maybe Cineverse told us that they don't expect to make any public statement about this. That is, to me, is very surprising, because, well, you know, when you say something like that, you're basically saying we don't want to talk about it anymore. But, you know, one thing is to get a press request from me or somebody else at, you know, the Times or the Washington Post or whatever. One thing is getting a letter from a senator or a congressman.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
congressperson.
Right. So, I mean, in the past, we've seen, like, you know, maybe this will happen, maybe it won't, but maybe Ron Wyden will ask for, like, we'll send a series of questions, and you essentially, like, have to respond to that if you're Cineverse, correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this could be like a national security issue. Potentially, it can be a national security issue. So you know, those messages, those emails, or those calls from politicians and regulators, they will have to answer those.
Right. So I do want to talk a little bit more about, I guess, before we move on, there's some people in the chat who are asking about the Facebook outage. Like, we're recording this. Facebook has been down for about 2 hours, which is a very long time in Facebook world. Obviously, there's nothing to suggest that this has anything to do with that. Just to clarify that for people, the Cineverse breach was discovered in May 2021. And we learned about it last week. We just didn't publish it because we wanted to clarify a couple details before we went up with the story. So no connection between Cineverse and Facebook outage.
Yeah, I mean, it's even, we don't know about whether there's a connection, but I don't think there could be, because Cineverse just doesn't touch that kind of stuff. For now, all we know is that somehow the DNS records of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, you know, basically all servers, all domains under the Facebook umbrella were just deleted from the internet records, essentially. You know, sounds like it was some sort of a, if I had to guess, it's some sort of a mishap. It's, you know, I don't even know if you can do that as a hacking group. I just wrote
about this, just a quick story, and it is interesting to me because Facebook doesn't go down very often, and when there's huge internet outages, it often is a company like Cineverse. Like, there was a level 3 a DNS attack a few years ago, I believe, that sort of took down large swaths of the internet, and there was an AWS outage a few years ago that took down, like, I don't know, hundreds of the biggest websites on the planet. But this current Facebook outage seems to be primarily Facebook only. It's like Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger. And so that suggests to me that it's like, this is some sort of Facebook specific problem. And I'm actually surprised that it's still down, because it's like 2 hours for Facebook to be down is a really long time.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that is the big story here. It's the length of the outage, because as you noted, like, these things happen once in a while. You know, the internet is a very complex machine. There's a lot of interconnected parts. If one of them breaks, many others can break. And, you know, every year we have like some shorter outages of Twitter, Slack, whatever, that happens once in a while. But 2 hours for a company like that, you know, like, they have probably hundreds of people whose day job is to make sure that this doesn't happen, whose day job is to just make sure that the website stays up, because that's their whole business. For this to have been a few hours, it's really crazy. Like, I wish I was in the Facebook corridors or their Slack channels or whatever to hear what they're talking about.
The only thing we've heard from Facebook, like, so far has been on Twitter, which is obviously ironic.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, if Facebook.com, the domain, is down, that means that their email services are down. That probably means that they cannot even log into Slack, for example. I don't know. Like, or if they have like an internal chat, sort of a Slack, internal Slack that's like Facebook run, that's not working right now. So it's probably even hard for them to deal with this, because they cannot communicate with each other, especially, you know, in pandemic days where a lot of people still work from home.
Right. Anything else on Cineverse? I feel like there's like more to come here. This is obviously like one of the bigger hacks that we've covered in a while. I always am surprised by the fact that just like a new and interesting company with new and interesting data is hacked, and like it has these knock-on effects that you kind of aren't expecting. I guess, you know, I'm very curious as to who did this. So I think in terms of next lines of reporting, it's like we're going to keep looking into who did this and why, and was the data abused and that sort of thing. If you know, please hit us up. But I don't know, like, did we miss anything on the original hack on in terms of what we know already?
I think we haven't, but, you know, if there's a takeaway on this story right now and looking forward, is there's two big questions, I think. The biggest one is what data exactly was accessed by the hackers? You know, what were they interested in? Did they take anything? If so, what? And Cineverse right now just refuses to answer that question. We asked that question many times. We tried to really stress out the fact that that was the key question, right? Because, you know, after all, we are a general interest publication. We're not a business publication. Obviously, it's interesting that Verizon may be affected, but we wanted to know whether regular people, you know, just cell phone users were affected. So that's the big question. The second thing that I was surprised, and I think at some point Cineverse will have to explain, is why they are so cagey about this. One of the reasons that I think may explain this is that they're going public, and as part of that process, they're sort of in a phase of, like, you know, embargo, or like they don't want to talk to the press in general. But, you know, this is kind of a big incident, so they will have to answer some questions.
Right, right. Two other stories I want to talk about real quick before we sign off. Employees at Citizen are unionizing. This is not a story I was expecting to talk about today. I did not know that this was going to happen. But for anyone who's been following along, Citizen is this vigilante justice, like, social network for crime, essentially. Joseph Cox has been doing really great reporting on them for the last few months. And it all kind of came to a head in May when there was this wildfire in Los Angeles in the Pacific Palisades, which is a rich neighborhood overseeing sort of the beach and Malibu and Santa Monica and all these just very fancy neighborhoods. And what happened was there was an arson there, and the CEO of Citizen, whose name is Andrew Frame, lives kind of close by, and he logged on one Saturday night, and they did this thing called On Air, which is this, like, live, they basically, like, live stream crime, essentially, like, live stream crime scenes. They've used it in the past to, like, reunite missing persons, and the other day they were live streaming from downtown LA where this gunman was locked himself inside a hotel room. Anyways, during the Pacific Palisades fiasco, Andrew Frame set a bounty on this guy. He basically was like $30,000 to anyone who helps find this specific person. They streamed for like 6 hours, put this guy's face on, you know, on their app, blasted, you know, everyone who has the app in LA, which is like 800,000 people, with these alerts saying, like, find this guy, and we'll give you $30,000. And a few days after that, Joseph and I wrote a big story where we got all the Slack messages from this, this incident, basically. Like, we had someone leaked them to us, and we were able to see what was happening in real time. And we learned that the CEO, Andrew Frame, was, like, really pushing super hard behind the scenes to find this person, and, you know, was saying things like, find this fuck, like, this guy is the devil, like, we need to find him by midnight. Like, it was just, it was crazy, frankly. It was one of the craziest stories, like, I've ever seen. And it was just really... the level of leak that we got was kind of the level of leak that you dream of, where it's like, we got everything. Like, this was kind of everything that was happening in real time. And then we learned that the person that they were looking for was the wrong person. And so they essentially accused an innocent man of starting a wildfire and then put a bounty on his head for $30,000. And we then had notes from an all-hands meeting that Citizen had later that week, where they were like, many employees were like, why did we do this? We're really upset about this. And apparently, sort of this conversation and the disappointment associated with this manhunt led citizen employees to file for a union election with the NLRB. And so they're unionizing. They say that they're kind of pushing for more control at the company, and they're also asking for more money and things like this. It's a really interesting situation because it's like we've been writing about organized labor and labor unions, you know, with increasing frequency over the last few years. And we've seen a lot of labor organizing among like gig workers and blue collar workers at tech companies. But we haven't seen so much when it comes to the actual developers and tech employees at tech companies. And I think we've been wanting to see more of that. The issue, and I want to speak lightly because I don't think workers should be abused anywhere they are, but basically, like, the issue is citizens' whole reason for being is like a surveillance app that has disproportionately hurt black people, black and brown people, homeless people. It's just kind of like a mess of a company. And so I'm not sure how much change these people are going to be able to get if they unionize, because it's like the entire reason for the company existing is one of surveillance.
Yeah, it's a crossover I was not expecting for sure.
Yeah, in the motherboard cinematic universe. And then the last one, I mean, we can talk about this real quick, is we have... there was a big ransomware arrest earlier today in Ukraine. What can you tell us about this?
We know very little about this because the police is not talking too much. But what the cops have said, and this was a joint operation between Europol, which helps all European law enforcement agencies work together. They worked with the Ukraine cyber police. And they arrested two people in Kiev, in Ukraine. They're accusing them of being part of a ransomware gang that was, I think they said that they were responsible for asking about $70 million in ransom. This is probably over like several incidents. What's interesting here is that they are not saying what gang they were part of. And they were very clear that they are not saying it for operational reasons, meaning there's probably more arrests to come. There's probably other things that they're doing, you know, other law enforcement actions they're taking. And they just did not want to say who these people worked for. They had a bunch of cash, they had a fancy looking gaming PC, which was set up for streaming. So, you know, unfortunately, the police took that away. Otherwise, they could have joined.
We've got to bring them on here, huh?
At some point. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, the cops took that PC. But, you know, that's something, obviously not the biggest question in this of the world. But I would like to know what they were doing. You know, were they doing a podcast? Were they just playing games? I don't know. But yeah, I think it's interesting because we are seeing, obviously, a lot of ransomware incidents in the last few months. There's been unprecedented attention towards ransomware in DC, you know, in other countries, other governments, heads of state like the President Biden have been talking about ransomware as a national security priority. And, you know, this is what law enforcement can do. They can go after the operators. But there's also an argument to be made that, you know, how much hurt can you do to a gang that's like probably dozens of people all over the world just by arresting two of them? Right. Obviously, you know, that's how you start, I guess. That's how you send a message maybe as well. And you got to do it. You know, these are suspected criminals. But yeah, you know, it's just another step, another like battle in a long war against ransomware.
Yeah. Lorenzo, one last thing. We have a user question from Gunna Burns on Twitch. They say, thank you for reporting on these important stories on Twitch. Thank you for being here. They said, I heard there were a few zero-day vulnerabilities that remain in Apple iOS 15, but were reported to Apple back in May. Have y'all done a story on this or know any more about it? The answer is yes. We have done a story about it. Lorenzo wrote about it a week ago or so. What's going on here?
Yeah. We did write about it. Initially when I was listening to the question, I was like, did we write about those? Because there's been so many that we haven't written about all of them. But in this case, yes. These are some exploits or bugs. These are some vulnerabilities that an independent researcher reported to Apple between March and May. I believe there were four. Three of them are still unpatched. This person went through the whole process. They contacted Apple. They shared details about the vulnerabilities. Apple responded saying, we're on it. We're going to fix them. Thank you so much. And then they kind of went into a black hole, meaning Apple did not communicate back to the researcher. Every time the researcher checked in, Apple was like, we're working on it. We're still working on it. I'm sorry. Thanks for your patience. Things like that. And fast forward to September, so a couple of weeks ago, the researcher was basically fed up. He did not want to wait any longer. And he published a blog post in which he disclosed all the details about these vulnerabilities. He even published the exploit code, the source code, meaning that he essentially told everyone how to abuse these vulnerabilities, how to exploit these vulnerabilities and hack an iPhone. Now,
this is very rare. It's super rare when you actually get the actual code for a zero day dropped. Even I would say it's even pretty rare for a patched vulnerability to have the actual source code of the vulnerability dropped, at least for an iPhone.
Yeah, there's many reasons for that. One of them is, in this case, Apple is very controlling of this kind of stuff. Their bug bounty program, which the researcher was part of, he was hoping for a bounty and was going through the bug bounty process. I believe that their conditions is that the researcher who reports a bug has to agree that they cannot write anything about the bug before Apple tells them that it's okay to do it. So in a normal situation, yes, a researcher reports a bug to Apple, Apple fixes it and then says, okay, you're free to talk about it because it's patched. I think they expect to see the draft of the blog post, if you have a blog post. I don't know how much that is enforceable. In this case, I don't know if Apple can take any action against the researcher. But yeah, this is rare because usually researchers just play nice because, they at the end of the day, this person and many researchers just want these things to be fixed. They don't want to see the world burn or the internet burn or iPhones burn, figuratively speaking. As you said, it's also rare in general just because, sometimes when a bug is fixed, there's no point in publishing the exploit code because it's already done. Other times, researchers believe that it's not responsible to release the exploit code, especially before a patch, because the belief there is that, you're basically teaching anyone on the internet to take advantage of it. And even when it's patched, people are slow at patching, especially if we're talking about systems or applications that are used by large companies. That's not just... patching those things is not just you and I going into our iPhone and updating iOS. It's a process that needs a lot of approvals. It takes time. So publishing exploit code is generally believed to be a sensitive thing to do, like in the sense that you gotta be a little careful. Like in the past, last year, GitHub, or maybe early this year, I forget. GitHub took down some exploit code in Microsoft systems. I think it was Windows. And the argument there was that this was too dangerous. Someone could have taken them and, exploited them. Innocent people.
Right. Cool. I think that's it for today. Thank you to everyone who is watching us on Twitch. If you're on Twitch, this will be live on Cyber in an hour or so. If you're listening on Cyber, we're going to be doing this on Twitch probably twice a week. So if you don't want to wait for it to show up in your feed, you can check out twitch.tv/motherboardtv. I am Editor-in-Chief Jason Kebler. I'm here with Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai. Please check out our stories on Cineverse. iPhone, Zero Days, Citizen, and everything else that we talked about today. Here we go. Gonna play us out. I am Jason Kepler. I produce and edit this podcast on a mixing board I have in my kitchen. So working on the bugs here, but thanks for listening. See you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org, paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.